It's all the files of the whole park. It tells you everything.
Sir, he's uploading the virus.
Eagle One, the package is being delivered.
It's been a pretty bad PR year for the world's most popular rideshare app. And unsurprisingly, it has poured money into good news stories to kick up warm, fuzzy feelings about a company that has been found, time and again, to not care very much about its drivers. Enter a CNBC paid partnership story about an Uber Eats driver who is about to make $100K a year. The American dream, right? Not so, says Motherboard reporter Edward Angueso, who broke down the falsities of this rather suspect piece of news. That's this week on Cyber. I'm Ben Maku, coming at you from my kitchen. Edward, welcome back to the pod.
Thanks, it's great to be back.
I mean, you're the number one pain in the ass for Uber, I believe.
Maybe.
I feel like everyone at Uber knows this.
I feel like reality is their pain in the ass, you know?
Reality is their pain in the ass. I mean, it's... you've done some great work on this, and this story in particular, this is something that you only get if you're on top of it so closely. And walk me through it. So first off, how did you find out about this Uber report?
Right.
Essentially.
So, you know, funny thing is this story, you know, basically this story about, this inspiring story of how this Uber Eats driver almost was on track to earn $100,000 a year was published in June. But CNBC posted it again in over this past weekend, right? And so the story is basically like this Uber driver worked so hard that, you know, he was on track to make $100,000 a year. He made like $8,300 in 1 month. Here's how, you know, in case you wanted to replicate it. And it was done by Grow, which is this partnership between CNBC and, you know, kind of like a business, you know, press, morning press, and Acorns, which is supposed to be a financial services company. And their usual shtick, you know, their gimmick is that, like, they take people who earn a lot of money in 1 month and then they project it into the year usually and say, hey, if you want to make like 80,000, 100,000, 200,000, this is what you got to do, you know. And so that's what they did with this Uber thing. And I think the headline's misleading, the way they framed the video is misleading. If you dig in even a little bit, which these people should have done because they're financial services people, like, the whole thing falls apart pretty quickly.
So what did you do? Where's this Uber driver? Where is he driving?
So he is driving in Washington, I believe. He's driving in Oregon. He's a driver in Oregon, and he's I think the city is Salem.
That's mm-hmm. the capital.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he says essentially he's approaching making $100,000. Mm-hmm. You broke it down though. You looked into it further. I mean, how did you deconstruct that?
Right. So, you know, he gives you upfront a basic breakdown of his expenses and income in his own TikTok video, because he recorded this thing on TikTok and then CNBC interviewed him and made their own graphic. So in their story, in their video, they talk about how he made $8,357 in a month, right? And that outpaces the average pay per week scaled up to an annual salary of like $72,000, right? His expenses are supposed to be like $5.99 for gas, an oil change at $49, a phone holder at $5. He ran about 4,800 miles, but they don't calculate that, and that ends up becoming a big cost later. And then taxes, which would run him about 30% or 2,000. So, you know, after taxes, just immediately when you go through that, after taxes, he's left with like 5,396. So, you know, he's not making 100,000, I think. But then, like, you know, some people might say, well, it's not fair to say he's not making 100,000 because everyone pays taxes. Okay. You know, then we can step back and look at what his real expenses are. Because if you run almost 5,000 miles on your vehicle, you know, you're not going to have zero expenses. And if you do almost 5,000 miles on your vehicle every month, right?
Well, that's the thing, right? It's it's miles per like damage to your car as well, right? That's right. The other thing.
His car already had 60,000 almost, or his car before he started the challenge had about like 58,000 to 60,000 miles on it. So another, you know, another 1,000 plus miles. He's going to either need a new car or something's going to break pretty badly in it. It's about a 2014 Ford Mustang, if I remember correctly, right? So
that is not a rigorous vehicle either. Yeah. That's like,
so
that's also like, why is he, I'm sorry, this is something I missed in the article. He's driving a Mustang and mm-hmm. he's a fucking Uber driver?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I think I looked through
why?
His... So the thing was, he had
it's like, yeah, online. Yeah. Just a second. I gotta let you in. I gotta get out, and then you're gonna get in behind me and crank the seat. Like, what is the point of that? That seems like very COVID unfriendly.
Yeah, you know. So I think part of it was he before had like an online business, right? And that I think was the majority of his income, and then that dried up, and then he wasn't able to get another job. So he's been trying to. He did the Uber Eats delivery for about a month, and then he tried to pivot that, his online presence and the viral media, into like a business that he would start. And now he's doing like road trips and some other stuff on his TikTok. But all of that kind of still, like you said, like even the numbers don't really communicate. On the one hand, they got the numbers wrong, but also on the other hand, like they're talking about someone who drove 12 hours a day every day for 30 days. That's not sustainable for him. As he said in his own videos, he took like a week, almost a 2 week break afterwards and didn't do anything because of how exhausting it was. But that's not.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's not possible for him to do for a year, you know, every single fucking day.
No. You ever talked to an Uber driver? It's
yeah.
like, I know you have, but it's like, they're like, yeah, it's a 12 hour shift. I'm like, no, I'm out. Like,
yeah,
no,
you know?
Thank you. Like what? You have like take like two bathroom breaks?
Right. If that, right? He tried
to. Yeah, you're going to wear a catheter? Like, mm-hmm. Jesus.
A lot of the Uber drivers I've talked to over the past, if they work more than 60 hours a week, they have to have a serious, like, they have to make a serious decision about whether or not they're going to live in the car for that week, you know? Because it's not worth it. Honestly, for them, it's not worth it to go home because you miss rides, you miss trips, or you miss deliveries.
That is disgusting.
Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's like that. There are all sorts of hidden costs that this video didn't cover. It didn't cover the expense of vehicles. It didn't cover like the expense of like the mental health and the physical health toll that driving would take. Like, there's a reason why driving in most commercial, you know, categories is not allowed to be done today for more than 10 to 11 hours or 60 hours a week. It used to be even stricter. It used to be you can't drive more than 8 hours a day, right? And even the apps, they don't let you drive, do their ride-hail driving, you know, that long.
It also just like the story itself is just this sort of blatant example of selling this, you know, unrealistic capitalistic dream that doesn't actually exist. It's like you too can make $100,000 a year if you just – pick mm-hmm. yourself up by your bootstraps and live in your vehicle and drive for Uber.
Right.
And you can do it. And isn't this amazing opportunity that Uber offers us? And you're kind of like, whoa, when you peel the shades back, you're kind of like, well,
right.
Actually.
Because like on the first hand, it's like, all right, 84 hours, that's two full-time jobs. Is 100,000 really like a lot for two full-time jobs?
Yeah.
And then...
Were you Gordon Gekko? Like, come on.
Yeah, you know? Like, it's not... It increases.
You're throwing down those types of hours. You better have a penthouse. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like you shouldn't be doing that for $100,000 a year.
The only people I know who work 80-hour weeks are like people I went to school with that now work on Wall Street or work for.
Yeah, exactly. Same here.
You know?
Same here. Just like those really. Yeah, I'm not going to get into the adjectives, but those types of people.
As much as I, you know, do not like them, they are making the amount of money they're making kind of makes sense for like 80-hour work weeks, you know, like multiples of hundreds of thousands of dollars with crazy bonuses. You know, if you're doing 84 hours a week, I can understand that even if it's like a, you know, deplorable activity, but if you're making $100,000, 84 hours a week driving around, and that doesn't even account how, like, you know, your mileage, for example, is probably going to,
yeah.
As I talk about, like, the the IRS, what, calculates mileage per mile of 57 cents, and that would come up to like $2,000 off of his Uber pay, right? But a Seattle study calculates the rate at like closer to 72 and a half cents. So that would knock out like $3,512 from his whole pay, right? So you knock out $3,500 from that. You knock out another, what, like $1,500 from the taxes. You also have to take into account his tip, the way his tips and pay are actually split. You know, Uber, in reality, paid him like $5,300 flat, and then tips were almost $3,000. You know, so when you really like, when you keep breaking it down and down and down, at the end of the day, he's really only left with like $3,300, right? About $9 an hour for driving 84 hours a week.
That's no thank you.
Yeah.
No thank you.
You can get that driving 40 hours a week if you really wanted to. You don't need to.
Yeah. Exactly. So thanks in no small part to you and other reporters, Uber has not had a very good year publicity-wise. Or even I'd just say the last, like, I don't know, nine months have not been great for Uber.
Yeah.
Been a lot of great reporting looking at it and how its business model is flawed. Its workers aren't treated very, very well. They've had a host of labor issues across the world. Mm-hmm. So what is this example of? This is clear. I mean, this is Uber in some way or another helps direct a story like this.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it because, you know, like it's just such like a, it's such a poorly done financial analysis that misses all the normal costs. Like I have to assume that a financial services company understands the way that contractors pay expenses and taxes, but this video had none of that, right? So it feels like a PR blitz, part of the PR blitz. And they've had like a comprehensive one, you know, over the past 2-3 months, but you know, in reality, like over the past year and a half, they've been ramping up their Yes on Proposition 22 campaign, and that's to get the state of California to vote yes on a ballot measure that would make them exempt from AB5. And AB5 is a law that would reclassify independent contractors when they're being misclassified. You know, if a company actually controls them the way that it controls its employees, or if it needs them the way it needs their employees, but just misclassifies them to save costs, it'll reclassify them as employees. And they've spent, along with like Lyft, Postmates, DoorDash and Instacart, $181 million on it now. They've massively expanded their lobbying operations in California and D.C. They're in like full attack mode. They've got multiple ads up. They got this ridiculous billboard. What was it? If you tolerate racism, delete Uber, which was, you know, like shouts out to the PR person that came up with that, because that the delete Uber is like the phrase that almost – that threatened to tank them in 2017 because they actually were like found to be trying to break a strike that happened at JFK Airport, where the taxis were trying to protest Donald Trump's Muslim ban. And when that happened, they lost a significant amount of market share, and Lyft came in to eat that shit up. And ever since, you know, people have tried to use that hashtag as a way to reiterate that they don't like Uber, that Uber can be deplorable. And now they're saying, look, like, you know, like, actually, you should delete it. You know, we're the good guys here. You know, so it's a lot. It's been a lot of PR shit. They've been earning their salary over there, I think, for the past year now.
I mean, undoubtedly. But I also think, like, has it worked completely? No. I mean, forgive me if I'm wrong. And I knew they struggled with reaching profitability for their investors. Have they at this point?
No. And the thing they still haven't. And they actually, and I'm, you know, if you dive in the numbers, the books are increasingly, they've come up with accounting measures, non-standard accounting measures that don't really, you know, work for their company, let alone the type of business they run, that obscure how much money they actually lose and how much money they burn and how unprofitable they are. And so they're in the middle of a bunch of moves right now to try to delay, you know, the guillotine coming down. You know, like they're refinancing their debt so they don't have to pay back bonds in 2023, and pushing them back to 2028 because that gives them some extra time to then build up more money to refinance the debt. They're cutting down like autonomous vehicles or, you know, rapidly curtailing the operation of it. They're cutting off unprofitable business lines that they had or ruined, like electric scooters, for example.
You did a nice little story on that.
Yep. You know, like were they literally burning them the way they burn their money? You know, it's just there's no path for Uber to be profitable as it is. And especially once it is forced to reclassify drivers in California and then hopefully the rest of the country.
I mean, it's just another example of under the guise of this Silicon Valley genius perspective that society has been sold. Mm-hmm. It really ends up being just this massive money pit bonfire.
Yeah. You know, and it's worked out well, I think, for the people who got in early. You know, Goldman Sachs got in early, made millions, tens of millions of dollars on their investment. You know, the early like Silicon Valley investors that got in, early angel VCs, early funds that got in, got out and made a killing on their investment. They made the founders billionaires and the early executives billionaires. But it has like trapped almost every driver that goes onto it into like a cycle of debt and poverty that is hard to escape because of how expensive it is to drive for Uber full time, which you need to make money.
Well, Edward, that this is, as always, you are the definitely the one of the saddest interviews and most fun.
Yeah, I know. I hear you.
It's like both. Like, well, I look forward to the next one.
Of course, thank you. Talk soon.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All right.
Lorenzo, come stai, ragazzo?
Good afternoon, Benjamin. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? How's everything on your end?
I'm good. You know, I think I'm finally settling into this new shitty reality. It's still shitty, but at least my brain is adjusted to the shittiness at this point, I think.
I know, but it's cold now, man. Like I was saying, last night, here we are. We're in business. Bisonis, 12 degrees. Sorry for all you Americans out there.
Yeah,
that's like what, 50? Metric. Like 50, 60? 50, 60s?
Too little. Too cold. That's the
too cold is what it was. Yeah.
Definition. Yeah.
Canadian cold. I don't want it. Yeah. But it sucks. There's like no more beach, man. There's no more beach. The dream is over, Lorenzo.
Yeah. See you next June, I guess. You know?
You know what dream isn't over, though?
Football. Football
well,
is back.
No, I was going to say my favorite topic of all. Kato, cue that music. UFOs, bruh. The Japanese government.
I want to believe.
I want to believe too. I do believe. The Japanese government has decided that they too will track UFOs. I love it.
Yes, this is yet another sign that we should be taking this seriously because everyone else is, you know. The Blink-182 singer is, and now Japan is as well. And yeah, as you said, the Japanese defense minister, Taro Kono, has instructed his military personnel to start tracking UFOs and report any sightings to the Japanese self-defense forces. Taro Kono, the minister, has said that he personally doesn't believe in aliens, but is interested in the findings. And it sounds like he was invited by the U.S. government to do this. Kono and the U.S. Secretary of Defense Mark Esper had a meeting a few weeks ago, and they discussed UFOs. And it seems like that's what prompted this decision.
So one thing I will say about the UFOs, though, okay, is that apparently there's a recent blurb in Bob Woodward's book that's gotten all the attention because basically Trump has said very early on that he knew the coronavirus was awful and that it was going to kill people and was very much so could be contracted very easily. But there was another sliver where he said, like, Trump told Woodward, he's like, you don't even understand the brand new nuclear system we have. That's like, it's something you couldn't even think of. And then apparently it was fact checked. And someone deep in intelligence told Bob Woodward, like, yeah, that's true. We do have some sort of like insane other system that nobody knows about. And that apparently they were shocked that Trump even mentioned it. So I was like, okay, all right. Like, is this just the US government? Like just ripping around in like glowing fucking spheres? Like possibly. Who knows now? But I mean, I want to believe, Lozo.
So you think the government is getting ready to fight aliens with nuclear weapons?
More like maybe these aircraft are like their super advanced system of flight. I don't know anything anymore. I don't know. It's 2020, Lorenzo. It's 2020. What do you know? I don't know anything anymore.
Yeah,
my brain is done
anymore either.
My brain is done.
Yeah, we have to say one more thing about this Japan story is that for now there have been no sightings, unfortunately.
Yeah, for now, so far. Yeah.
Although if I was an alien, I would go to Japan right now rather than the US, you know?
I wouldn't go. I mean, I would. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Oh. The belly of the beast is where we're at. All right. So on to the next one. We do have a beautiful story that Mr. Edward did, which was very good. So Ellie's partnering with an infamous crime reporting app to track coronavirus. I don't like that. I don't really like any of that app tracking coronavirus stuff that much because I don't actually think it works. I think this is in fact possibly some sort of long. I think it's a reach because I don't think it hasn't worked in places where the numbers have gone down. There's been no, you know, Uber Big Brother surveillance system. So why would we need one? It's about wearing masks.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I feel like this is another techno utopian dream. And yeah, we've talked exactly about this a lot on the podcast, you know, the idea of doing contact tracing. So, you know, figuring out who people who have contracted the virus have met and so where the virus could have spread in an attempt to contain it. And you know, there's obviously a lot of privacy doubts, and we've spoken with epidemiologists who are also not very sure about the technology. But it seems like none of these concerns reach government bodies because the Los Angeles County has just announced that they signed a contract with Citizen, which was an app that used to be called Vigilante. Talk about shitty marketing there. And this company, Citizen, is rolling out a contact tracing app called SafePass, which is meant to track symptoms, find testing sites, and get alerts when somebody gets exposed to somebody who has tested positive for COVID. As you said, like with this story, there's already the usual concerns, like is this even going to work? Are people even going to install it? And this is the main one. Like, I don't think you're going to get a lot of people to install this when they realize that it was made by a company that who was backed by Peter Thiel, that was originally kicked off by the by Apple from the App Store because of fears that it would encourage vigilantism. This is where with their original app that was called Vigilante, that was supposed to be sort of like a crowdsourced neighbor app for people to report potential crimes. It was also actually banned from the App Store because of privacy violations. So it just seems like the wrong company to partner with, and I don't understand why they did it. There must be other alternatives, and there must be a better way. And Edward, as you said, wrote a great article breaking all this down, and these lines from Edward I think sum it up very well. So I just wanted to quote them. At best, the Citizen app seems to be a glorified transcription service for emergency radio that encourages people to go out to stream and document incidents that are unfolding around them. At worst, it is just another in a long line of fear-mongering surveillance platforms that offer paranoia as a service. This is the company that's going to presumably help Los Angeles County fight coronavirus. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm very skeptical. It's funny because now we have the benefit of, you know, some actual experience with coronavirus and watching certain societies and how they've dealt with them and how some have done better than others. And instead of just, you know, if you look at somewhere like Taiwan, they have actual physical contact tracers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same with South Korea. Yep.
And same with South Korea. That's that. And they're the ones that have really, they're the ones that have really kept the numbers down. They haven't spiked as much. Although I think South Korea might've spiked recently and then it went back down. But either way, they've had human contact tracers. And this is, I think, the best way to actually deal with this problem, rather than just sort of allowing like in this very 2013, 2012 way where we just like refer to Silicon Valley to solve our problems because we think that they're like these brilliant people that aren't just going to harvest our our personal data for profit. Anyway, you know what I mean? Like I don't know. I'm very skeptical about these contact tracing apps.
Yeah, as you said, like it's been, you know, more than 6 months now with the pandemic, and there's yet to be an example of like a country that has successfully used these apps for good. And with all the doubts that these apps warrant, I just don't know if it's even worth doing right now, trying this.
No, I'm with you. I think it's, yeah, I don't know. Like maybe just to convince people that masks are smart.
Yeah, wear masks, stay home if you feel sick. That's really all it takes.
Exactly. All right, so our third and final, it's a Jay Cox special. JoJo hasn't been on the show in a little while, actually. We got to get him on. This is kind of a classic JoJo story, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's another one in the long series of stories that he has done over the last couple of years about these very sketchy and super intriguing and interesting encrypted phone networks that are, you know, namely companies that provide secure phones for anyone who really needs them that, you know, end up being used mostly by criminals. In this case, the company was EncroShot, which he wrote about a few months ago. The company was selling these special Android phones. All their users got hacked by the French gendarmerie, the police in France, in a joint investigation with the National Crime Agency in the UK. And this story details how they deployed, the cops deployed an Android malware that essentially took over the whole phone. And the idea was to, you know, get all the users' data and see who's who and see what they were up to. And thanks to this operation, the cops got 100 million encrypted messages. So, you know, there were like thousands of criminals out there in Europe who thought that they were communicating securely, sending messages about drug deals and hitman services that were out of reach from the police. But actually the police was listening and was, you know, just getting transcriptions of all their texts and calls. And yeah, like this is fascinating because it may very well be, and it's definitely the largest hack we know of that police has ever done.
The biggest hack ever by police.
Yeah. I mean, there may be another one that we don't know of yet, but I doubt it. Like this is like an incredibly, like the scale of this operation was insane. They essentially looked at the network of EncroShot users and said, you know what, we're just going to hack everybody and then figure out who is a criminal and charge them. And in the last few months, we've already seen the result of this operation. A bunch of people have been indicted, arrested, and it's probably just the beginning. I'm sure that the cops are just still going through all the evidence gathered in this huge hack.
Wild. All right, well, Lorenzo, hopefully it doesn't get too much colder, but I will definitely be hearing from you soon, probably next week. I'll probably have a couple Slack messages to give you about how shitty FC Barcelona is, but potato, potato, farewell.
Farewell. Talk to you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.